All right, listen up. This is Hoxton on Audio Boom. Get your ears working, people.
This week on Double Tap, EGX Rezzed.
It's going on a rampage. You are just a serial murderer who loses it a little bit and decides, you know what, I'm going to go and kill everyone.
And is the new Dark Souls easier?
I've heard that the difficulty varies for certain people. I'd say ultimately the difficulty is in the eye of the beholder.
Hello and welcome to Double Tap. I'm Alice Taplin. In this week's show, my trip to EGX Res last weekend at the end of the London Games Festival. But first, Souls is the notoriously brutally difficult fantasy series where players explore various fallen kingdoms while battling monsters and dragons. And now, supposedly the final installment, Dark Souls 3, is here. But has it all got too easy for the grand finale? I was joined by Garrett Drake from the It's Obvious Gaming podcast to find out just that and more.
Oh dear. Another dogged contender. Welcome, unkindled one. Purloiner of cinders.
I've heard that the difficulty varies for certain people. I'd say ultimately the difficulty is in the eye of the beholder. I mean, for me, for example, it might be insanely difficult just because it's my first time playing Souls compared to Bloodborne. I know there's some similarities. I know as far as it's compared to the others, obviously this was built with current gen consoles in mind. Therefore, the game world automatically is bigger and more terror ensues because of that. But Miyazaki, the creative director, actually is quoted as saying he's directly responsible for the difficulty in the game. That's actually mostly his personal touch. But he says he tries to find the balance between brutally difficult and unreasonable. And he says that's a very fine line, and I'm sure anyone who's played the series can totally agree.
Is there really such thing as too difficult in Dark Souls, do you think?
Man, I don't know. Maybe that question will be answered for me at the end of the day after I've played for a few hours. But from what I've read and what I've experienced in Bloodborne, there was never a point where I thought it was too difficult. I mean, sure, there's a couple times where I wanted to throw my controller out the window. But
you get that in any game, though, don't you?
That's very true. I've played games that are designed for like little kids that I've had frustration with before, so I trust that Miyazaki knows what he's doing and that the company's had a lot of success with this franchise, and that based on what I've read about this game specifically, I don't think that there is a form of it that's too difficult. So I say bring on the brutality. I'm ready to face it.
But one of the new elements they introduced was bosses that morph mid-battle because, you know, it stops people from getting lazy and just using the same combos until they kill the boss. So is this kind of a welcome element to the difficulty, do you think, or does it just make it a bit too ridiculous?
Right. You know, I would say, again, that's probably personal preference. For me personally, I think that's awesome because I've always loved surprises in games, especially in a game that's obviously known for its difficulty, in a game that's this exciting and you go into the unknown. That's one of my favorite parts of the game, or what I'm mostly excited about, is going into this brand new world that I haven't seen much of anything of yet. I've just, like I said, I'm going in blind. So not only will I be discovering a brand new world that I have no clue what to expect, but the fact that I'll be fighting enemies and maybe doing one thing 1 minute, and then the 10 seconds later, they're doing something completely different that has me change my approach completely. So I think the fact that enemies morph just keeps things interesting and keeps things exciting just as you progress through the game, because you're always in for a surprise.
So what new elements are there in this game that weren't in the last?
Faster paced combat. I know that a weapon skill system has been implemented that kind of uses your focus points, which is a small bar, so they have to be used creatively and wisely in combat. Because I know, for example, if you choose to dual wield, say, a large sword or like a smaller weapon that kind of has like a faster pace effect, and then your heavier weapon, you can kind of switch between the two and use your skill points wisely to kind of put together devastating combos. Like I've heard players saying, like, if you jump into a battle and start off with one of your heavy attacks and then continue it with one of your skills, that kind of cuts up an enemy even more in a quicker way before you deplete all those focus points. It can be effective in fighting certain enemies. And I know Dark Souls 2's adaptability is gone. I know that was a complaint from the previous game where Oh yeah, you had to spend adaptability points to raise your shield better and to dodge better and to heal yourself quicker and everything. I know players weren't a big fan of that, and that's something they eliminated completely from the previous game. Enemies apparently hide more. I know it's not uncommon for enemies to kind of hide out of your line of sight and stuff when you're approaching them. I mean, typically you'll have an idea of where enemies are, but apparently enemies deliberately hide from you around corners and stuff that'll attack you out of nowhere, which obviously doesn't scare me at all or have me screaming like a small child when it happens.
And what do you think kind of makes it so appealing to people? Because it is such a difficult game, and you know, you can get frustrated sometimes if you're playing something and you just can't get past a certain level or whatever, and you're just like, you know what, screw this, I'm putting the controller down and playing something else. So what makes Dark Souls kind of different from those other sorts of games?
Games these days that are as brutally difficult and unforgiving as the Dark Souls franchise are few and far between. And for me, I think mostly the sense of uncertainty as I explore the game for the first time is both exciting and terrifying. Like I said today, I mean, my buddies and I have been saying for weeks now that we're super pumped to play the game, but at the same time, we're terrified of the stress we may experience. But it's a good stress, because I think the difficulty just keeps things interesting, keeps things exciting. And plus, the sense of perseverance and satisfaction you feel upon beating a boss is just totally unmatched in any other game I've played.
Do you think that maybe some games these days aren't difficult enough?
I think that's very true. I think a lot of games tend to hold gamers' hands these days. I know other games that are starting to become inspired by the Souls franchise are trying to step into that more difficult realm. But there's tutorials upon tutorials and games that kind of show you exactly how to do everything and give you tips on how to defeat certain bosses or certain enemies and all that. But the Souls franchise, I like how it literally throws you into the world. It doesn't tell you how to do anything. It's just like, figure it out. I think that's one of the most exciting parts as well. It doesn't hold your hand at any point.
They've said that this is going to be the final installment in the Dark Souls series. Do you think that's actually true?
That's always hard to determine because, not to get too terribly off topic, but The Witcher 3, for example, was wildly successful. I mean, the whole Witcher franchise has been successful, but Witcher 3 was huge, and now it's gained an even broader audience than it had coming out of Witcher 2. And I've read a few rumors floating around that maybe they will make a Witcher 4. Who knows? Maybe they won't. But for example, Dark Souls, I feel like this series has gotten progressively more and more popular as time has gone on. So I think ultimately the sales will determine that. I think people are going to vote with their wallets. I mean, maybe they'll stick to their guns and end the franchise here. I can always respect when, whether it's a movie franchise or a game developer, sticks to their guns and say, here's our final chapter, this is how we're going to end it, and they stick to that. Say Miyazaki can't continue with the franchise and decides to go in a different direction and wants to create a new IP, for example, and someone else takes the reins. If going forward the games suffer because of that, then definitely I'd say it'd probably be best to in the franchise here, because obviously I think everyone puts their faith in his ability to design these games, and they're known for his personal touch. So I think if he continues with the franchise and his heart and his passion are still in the Dark Souls series, then I think that could continue to be great if they can decide to continue making them. But if they ended it here, hopefully my experience doesn't kill me at the end of the day. But we'll see what happens. So I'm excited.
The lords will abandon their thrones. The Unkindled will rise.
Now it's time for the gaming news with Jamie Wareham.
Lead developer on Rust, Gary Newman, has said that the decision to randomise race and gender in the game is not about imposing ideology. The game chooses those features for players based on their Steam ID. Newman said the feature gives an even spread race and gender, which makes the game more interesting. And Ubisoft has apologised for the problems in its recent update to The Division. The 1.1 update caused some players to notice characters had gone missing. Ubisoft has now confirmed that it's identified the source of the problem and that a fix is coming soon. Now for the esports. Optic Gaming will be parting ways with its team captain Shazeb Khan, yet since the team has failed to qualify for any international events since January. Otherwise known as Shazam, he's going to be replaced by Oscar Canellas or Mixwell. Ryan Abdir is no longer on Cloud9's CSGO roster, following a string of poor results. otherwise known as Freakazoid. His team has recently been struggling in domestic and European games, with an exit in the group stages at MLG Columbus. And Bandai Namco Entertainment has announced a $10,000 Australian dollar prize for their Dark Souls 3 speedrun contest. Open to anyone in Australia and New Zealand until May the 10th, complete the game in the fastest time and win the prize.
EGX Rest is the gaming conference where developers get early feedback and gamers get an early look at the titles that are going to dominate the field in the coming months and years. We went down at the end of London Games Week to see what was on offer. Alice here at EGX Rest at what were once tobacco docks in the heart of London, but today it's hosting developers who are looking for feedback on their games. I've started my delve into the future of gaming on the show floor where you get to test out some of the games. I'm here in the Square Enix Collective, which is the same studio as Tomb Raider and Hitman. This is Howard Philpott from Bulkhead Interactive, who told me about their game, The Turing Test.
So The Turing Test is a first-person puzzler. It's in UE4. And it's coming to PC and both Xbox One. So it's a story about Ava Turing. She comes down from a spaceship that's floating around Europa. And she's going down to investigate what's going on with the ground crew on Europa. You start off with really simple things. Like, you have this energy manipulation tool. And the cool thing about that is you can take energy from one object and then transfer it into another. So obviously that opens up like limitless possibilities for us as developers.
We were sent to Europa to investigate life. The life we found wasn't scary or complex. It was simple and elegant, powerful. But humanity grew fearful of our discovery. So now we're 400 million miles away from home, with no hope.
This is a game that you can't play in any other medium. You can't experience this story through film, like passive mediums like film and book. It has to be played as a video game, and that's what makes the Turing Test unique and interesting. So I can't wait for people to play it, and yeah, I hope you enjoy it.
All sounds very similar to Adrift, no? With such a focus on the growing world of esports, I also asked some of those showcasing today whether they could see their games played professionally. This is Nick Burkham from TTR World Tour.
I'm the CEO of Playrise Digital, and we make Tabletop Racing World Tour, which is coming out in May. Well, firstly, one of the things we focused on is the graphical quality. I think you can see here, it looks like AAA kind of studio quality, but we're still just a team of seven people. When we play it in the office, and we still play the game every lunchtime because it's really good fun, and normally by the end of development, you don't want anything to do with your own game. You just want it out the door and move on to the next one. But actually, we play most lunchtimes because it gets very vindictive. Because we all understand all the rules, and we also understand how the weapons counter each other, there is a chance that with a little bit more refining on weapon balancing, maybe we could do something that makes it a really fair fight in esports. I'd love to do it. I think it's an amazing, new, exciting area of this industry. And I've been in the business for 26 years, but to see that people want to watch this as a sport, watch competitive gaming as a sport, is wonderful.
But Robocraft, which is somewhere between virtual hex bugs and robot wars in space, weren't so keen.
We believe more in providing the tools necessary for a competitive audience to flourish. So we're looking at better social, better clan, that sort of thing. And then if such a community chooses to exist within the game, then we will do what we can to support them. But it's not a situation where we're looking to kind of specifically push for it.
I also spoke to Tag from Running With Scissors, the studio behind the highly controversial Postal, which was released in 1997, 2 years before the Columbine High School massacre. Now they're releasing Postal Redux, and as they describe themselves as giving the finger to political correctness, they anticipate it getting banned too.
It's going on a rampage. You are just a serial murderer who loses it a little bit and decides, you know what, I'm going to go and kill everyone.
Today is the day the madness builds to.
He's got a gun!
The Earth is hungry.
Open fire!
And soon it will feast.
Ah!
the key of it is that this is actually a redux of the original, which was released in 97. The original was 2D isometric. One of the big limitations of the 90s was hard drive space. But now, you know, we can afford to sort of like put more content into the game. And it's for the fans as much as just new players as well. Like anybody who loves twin stick arcade games can just jump straight in, start setting people on fire and stuff like that. You know, good wholesome fun for over the whole family over 18.
We'll see how that goes down, especially as next week is the anniversary of the Columbine shootings. But it wasn't all controversy. Indeed, one of the supporters of EGX Resd was GamesAid, the charity who acts as an umbrella group to help smaller charities support disabled and disadvantaged children. This is Rosa.
We help people like, for example, Special Effect, Action for Kids. So we run events throughout the games industry. All that money goes to us and we distribute it. The gamers get to decide what charities that money goes towards. This year we managed to raise $567,000.
So it's kind of like using games to help the wider community then?
Yes, it's a way for like the games community to give back.
And I think I was going to say it's kind of good to see things like this because obviously sometimes games can get a bit of a bad reputation being like violent or, you know, there's a lot of stigma around it. So I think something like this kind of brings a bit of positivity to it.
Yes, absolutely. And it's a way of showing like the games industry does so much for kids and for charity as well. We've got people like Sega, Codemasters, Square Enix. We've got really big names all helping towards Games Aid.
And for all you casual gamers out there who'd love to get into the industry but don't think you have the skills, this fella might just be of interest to you. After 4 years as an architect, now George O'Keefe designs architecture in games.
I'm a game art student at Escape Studios in London. I used to be an architect, but I'm after moving on to games now. The game industry is one of those things that you don't necessarily need to have a degree to actually progress in it, but it's one of those things that being taught by an industry professional and actually being taught the correct way to do things is just invaluable, really. And I kind of realized that I liked the kind of the visual side of things, but I wasn't really so keen on all the actual building and creation of that kind of thing. So I kind of just felt it was a natural way to progress was to go into the VFX side of things. So I originally looked at doing 3D for film and things, but I've always had a love for games. And I kind of, when I was growing up, I didn't really realize that you could actually make a living doing these things, you know. Luckily, I wised up, and now that's very much my intention to know.
So what, because I agree with you there that like when I was growing up, I didn't realize that you could, even though I liked video games, that you could actually work in them. And so what is the course that you're actually doing?
Yeah, so I'm doing an MA in game art. So we kind of touch on all bases, really, but it's mainly aimed towards the actual visual art side of things. So we don't really do the concept art kind of thing. We do the 3D modeling of environments and props and assets that are used in-game. It's amazing, really, that it was exactly from nothing into making a game. And I don't expect to be, you know, jobs to be being thrown at me after this, but it definitely really helps to up that portfolio standard. You know, basically, I had a portfolio that wasn't very accurate, and now I know that, you know, whereas back then I didn't really. Like, looking back on the stuff that I had before this course, you know, it just wasn't to the standard of what is actually out there, whereas now I can already see, only 12 weeks into this, that I'm getting there, you know.
Great day here at EGX Resd, particularly seeing both larger studios and smaller developers showcasing their games all under one roof. Definitely lots of discussion on esports on the show floor. But if I took one thing away from today, it's this. Although sometimes games can be controversial or have us competing against each other, ultimately, they still bring us all together as one community. And if you want to find out more about how Keith transferred his skills, check out Escape Studios for more information. Big thanks to London Games Festival and EGX Resd for showing us about, and to Garrett Drake from the It's Obvious Gaming podcast, another one you can listen to right here on Audioboom. See you next week.
Double Tap is an Audioboom production written and presented by Alice Taplin.